Blog Talk Radio.
I'm now Blog Talk.
There is only one thing hockey fans should be listening to. This podcast. You are listening to the Isles Beat Podcast with your host, BD Galoff and John Jordan. Prepare for your mind to be blown.
To be blown. Anyway, well, that sounds really inappropriate, come to think about it. But anyway, this is BD, and you're listening to Isles Beat. It is a week before the trade deadline, and lots of things to talk about. We've extended the show in minutes to see if some people have talked about calling in. We're also going to be speaking to, on Twitter, Green Lantern Jet, who is Jeff Capellini from CBS New York. He'll be calling in. I know that the weather in on the East Coast is kind of nasty. So, and power is coming in and out for Jeff, so hopefully he'll be on. And here we are. How's it going, John?
It's going well. Speaking of blowing it, you know, we lead in every week with the mistimed audio files to kick off our show, and I was just thinking next week when you inevitably hit that button several seconds early to try and time that right, it's going to go off right away, and it's going to sound crazy over the music, and we'll be cursing up a storm about that. But
I did it like a second or two before the music ended, and it's still delayed.
Yeah, well, I think the people are getting used to our follies, and it seems like we have as strong a following as ever. So I guess it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, the listens have been great. We had talked about just about the other week about quadrupling where we were to begin with. And in the last week, the last two shows have quadrupled that. So it's So it's been a pretty good growth. We're getting a lot of feedback. I really appreciate it. I mean, and we'll kind of divvy into some of the subjects in a minute. I did load a new soundbite up to kind of start us off on the first theme. So if you don't mind, I will see if we can get that to play. Hold on, because if anybody read the New York Post, this should be their official music. All right. Anyway, so the Benny Hill theme, for anybody who doesn't
Benny.
Know what that is, you better look
Big
it up.
Big Benny.
Obviously, in the middle of the Islanders actually winning a couple games, all of a sudden got an article in the New York Post hitting on something that I've actually hinted at in a previous podcast. A couple weeks back, I was teeing up Brett Yormark's comments on using a mobile phone in the obstructed view seats, and I had insinuated that I had heard, and I know that other writers, bloggers, had also had heard that there, you know, in the first year so far, there's been a little bit of friction between Barclays and the Islanders just working together. That it's not just that the fans are going through an adjustment; that both Barclays and the Islanders are going through adjustment. And it makes logical sense. These are things that, you know, is new for everybody. So, and of course, we didn't really say much more about it because we didn't think much more about it. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, you get them butting heads a whole bunch of times, then you have kind of a story. And then all of a sudden, New York Post has this article, which I believe is on the same basic information that we had had a couple weeks ago, saying and really expounding on all this trauma between the Islanders and the Barclays, but yet no real Barclays or Islander sources, which I find fascinating. I had to write out a whole big article on it because it was such an interesting piece to really throw out there to kind of like lap up all the drama. And here we are. And the question is, what is the truth? And I believe the truth very strongly, as if you read on Isles Beat, and the other people have sounded up off since, that there's not much to this. So, and I know that I need to pass this off to John because I'm sure you have some thoughts on it.
Well, you know, it's funny how these things happen just as we're starting to be able to get a little bit more excited about the on-ice play and hoping to focus on that and maybe talk about some possible trade deadline additions that we know are never going to happen. So says my realistic friend on the other side of the line here. But we'll get to that later. I always know that it's time to address these things when I have friends of mine down here in Florida that don't pay a lick of attention to hockey, certainly not anything outside the Tampa Bay Lightning anyway, sending me text messages or sending me links to Deadspin picking up on this or the New York Post article itself or messages that say something like Hartford Islanders, which is really fucking stupid if you think about it. But then I know it's time to address this, and at least we have the forum in which to do so here. You have done a wonderful job of keeping me grounded. There was a time when an article such as this would have sent me up to my comfortable spot on the ledge. But I believe that you are correct here, sir, and I'm hoping that the rest of the crazed fan base will settle down a little bit and remember the big point here about this being a big adjustment period for all involved parties.
Yeah, and you know, it's common sense and logic and what seems to be lost when you know, and the New York Post has a history of kind of biting onto these pieces and without a full story behind it, without really, I question the way they source it, because the same writer has written pieces about Arizona going to Las Vegas and all these other things that have not come to pass. And it really makes my head spin to hear them on WFAN and them not questioning the very things that we're questioning. So a little bit of common sense. And what it does is it buys in everybody's fear. You know, it causes reaction. Islander fans are going through a hell of an adjustment. Not everybody, you know, goes onto social media and not as savvy. Following the blogs and everybody else, and they hear these things, and then it gets pushed around because we live in a news land that lives on aggregation. So all that the Post story does is get aggregated. It gets aggregated to Sports NY. It gets aggregated almost immediately to NBC, and a whole bunch of other places. Without anybody even bothering to say, does that make sense at all? Let's just check that. And it's not like the Post has a great track record, especially in the terms of NHL. When you have only a couple weeks, a week before, you have Larry Brooks doing a troll job on the Islanders with JT on this ridiculous notion, which I think is homebrewed. I don't know what else he's homebrewing. That maybe Toronto is waiting for JT, not Stamkos or anyone else. And there's nothing behind that.
Maybe they're loading up for John Tavares the third, you know, 46 years down the road from now. I mean, maybe, right? Maybe is the key word there. I love when things are written with the maybe as the qualifier. That's always my favorite. That's my second favorite. to the tried and true, throw a headline up that's a question. Could the Islanders possibly be upset about being in Brooklyn? Question mark. Okay, yeah, sure. I could ask a question too. I always find that to be lazy, and I always find that there's a better approach. But I wonder, you know, these days, you got to get out there, and I'm sure you felt compelled or obligated even to post a rebuttal and kind of, you know, make people chill out like we always talk about. But I think there's a lot of people that, you know, try to be really careful about what the narrative is that they're putting out there, and then are forced into action to even touch something that they otherwise would probably ignore once a paper like the Post or another major outlet goes ahead and at least pseudo irresponsibly runs with something like that. You'd rather not even talk about this right now, I'm sure. I've been there before long ago.
Yeah, you know, it has to do with the same thing. Yes, I did feel the responsibility. I felt the weight back from when when the Lighthouse Project was going south and Newsday wasn't really following up on it at all, and all the different antics that was going on, and you were getting from, from former Islander employees one take that I didn't feel like that was accurate. And the more that, of course, the Lighthouse Project themselves wanted all the bloggers to give warm and fuzzy reports and be outraged at everybody else, and a lot of manipulation. But I felt that there was a responsibility at the time to find out what the truth is behind it, no matter who's at fault. And I felt, then I feel now that it's important to not just say as a fan to smack down the Post because I didn't like what I heard. It was that who I spoke to called it an absolute pile of crap. And, as I insinuated in the piece, the more I spoke to them, they said that it was completely inconsistent and inaccurate, the Post piece. So it's not a question of just hitting it because we don't like it. It's feeling the responsibility that someone needs to stand up and do something about it, or kind of, set the record straight, especially when you know differently. And, I know that Lighthouse Hockey had a piece, and I know that the others do. And that's the kind of the power of what blogs should be. And I also appreciated, when I was talking to other bloggers who had heard the same stuff that I did, that all of us stood there and said, well, we need more information. And it's the funny thing. Wasn't it once upon a time that it was the bloggers that used to make all the mistakes, and it was the mainstream media that used to rail on them? And here we are, where the bloggers are the ones doing their due diligence, and the New York Post going with a story which I think was half-baked.
Maybe that's an amazing change of roles. Yeah, and maybe it's a product of those old days where, when I was with you guys at the forefront of the emerging blogosphere, or whatever you want to call it, where we got so sensitive, those of us that did our best to do a respectable job and be responsible. And maybe it's a direct result of that, where we remember what that was like. And now it's, there's a little bit of desperation on the other side. I'm not saying that, they're out there to just stir up some shit all the time. And folks like yourself and others are the ones that have to come back and bring people back down to earth. But, it is a little eerily familiar. I will say that I do often go straight to the New York Post website when I want to learn who's been messing around with hookers recently. I seem to find that there's no less than at least three or four stories on the front page about some hooker or other, or some hooker-related material. So it is good for something.
Well, what you're saying is the New York Post might not source properly on other things, but you know that they're sourcing properly on hookers.
Yeah, and the thing is, maybe that's, maybe all their resources need to go down that avenue. Maybe there's not much left. The hooker market is deep.
Oh, I'm not touching that one. Wow.
Wow. Oh, boy. It's going to be one of those nights.
Yep. So, I mean, what's so difficult about it, and I know that once Jeff calls in, we'll put him on. But, look, it plays off everybody's fear. It plays off everybody's personal narrative. Nobody's happy with this scenario. Look, Charles wasn't happy. You know, as I said, when the referendum failed, this was it. That was it. And, he was tanking and taking on cash and leaking. And no one was allowing him any, if it wasn't the Republicans killing it with the Lighthouse Project, it was the Democrats killing off the referendum vote. Long Island is tremendously difficult and things changed. And, then Brooklyn themselves, when Charles was actually meeting with people from Quebec, people from Seattle, he met with everybody. You know, I don't know if that's very clear to everybody that, it wasn't just, I don't know if there was really that much legs to Kansas City, but there was definitely legs and people he was meeting with those areas. And I don't know about Vegas or anything else, but I know Quebec was a big player. He met with a lot of different people in a lot of different scenarios, and where it seemed that all of a sudden Brooklyn got very aggressive. They had a plan. They had a vision. They wanted to bring in and fill up, 40 more times their venue. So that's, and we have the deal that they have now. And that deal is very, very lucrative for the Islanders. I've heard from others that a lot of NHL owners are a little envious, because there's no such thing in a lot of professional sports of guaranteed revenue like this being paid to the team. This is a very unique situation, and I don't think fans really understand. I definitely think the press doesn't really understand that this is really something different. Basically, each year and it goes up, I believe, if I saw Andy Graziano's reminding us, it goes up a percentage point, single digits each year. But basically, it's like 52 and change right now that they're getting. So let's just say 52 and change. And it keeps on going up in those small increments. But they get that $52+ million each year in guaranteed revenue for the Islanders. Now, this doesn't have to do with their merchandise or their lucrative cable deal, or any money that they get as part of other teams coming into the NHL, which also pays them as well. So that's an attractive attribute. And that, and going into New York City, being a city team, is what attracted Ledecky and Malkin to come in and pay a $500 million valuation. That's a lot of money. That's not Long Island money. That's New York City money. And they're paying for that lucrative deal with Barclays and being a city team. And I know that's very difficult for Islander fans, but this is what has taken place. And I know there's a lot of confusion on what New York Post seems to keep on confusing. Previously, they said once upon a time in another article that Barclays had an opt-out. And I tried to fight it at the time because I have always been told it was a mutual opt-out. Both teams must agree in that, I believe at the fifth year, to opt out. And the chances of the Islanders opting out is very thin because of the money involved and being a New York City team. Ask yourself, what in 5 years is going to be built in Queens or New York City or Brooklyn? Or situation change, that's going to pay them that kind of money? Nothing is. And that's why it's not really going to change. And this last article, they finally said that both teams have an opt-out. And it was nice that they corrected themselves, but they're still wrong. It's a mutual opt-out. And I wish there was somebody else that could cite it. But that's what I've heard over and over and over again for the last probably year and a half. So these are the things that are in play here. So they're not things that are going to really move.
You know what really bothers me, and it's easy for me to latch on to, you talk about how it's a unique situation with the guaranteed money that comes in 50 and change, whatever it is, and how, you know, the mainstream, several members of the mainstream media might not understand that. That's not because it's difficult to understand. It might be unique, you know. It might be a standalone situation or close to it in professional sports, but it's not all that difficult to understand. So that tells me that the time isn't being taken to understand it, or the want to actually understand what's going on isn't there. And instead, it's just easy to write the story that people half expected to hear anyway. And here we are, haven't even made it through a full season, and there it is. But it ignites the overreactions that journalists want. It sparks the rumors that probably will never come to pass that opposing fan bases want. And it gets my friends giving me shit, which I don't appreciate, of course. But it goes to the laziness, and you know, I wish that didn't take place, but I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, no, and you know, to just bury one point home on this, and you know, I know that the weather's bad, so I'm sure Jeff has got his hands full. But I'll go ahead with it anyway. We'll kind of track back. The thing is, and I know that some people hold a candle at Nassau and say, oh, well, if they adjust Nassau to have more seats, things will change. And right now, Nassau is a fiasco. You have the Coliseum stopped because of the demolition or trying to because there's asbestos in the ceiling. You also have a lawsuit between the two parties that were allowed to develop it, which was a mistake to begin with. Mangano's allowed two different companies try to work together, Blumenfeld and Ratner's group at the time. And if you recall, and I know this is a while ago, there was a point that Blumenfeld and Ratner's could not agree in working together on the plan. So Blumenfeld took him to court, and just recently that their complaint has been upheld in court, which means there's much more legal wrangling over the Coliseum. But that's neither here nor there, because let me tell, and people are saying, well, maybe they'll add more seats. And this is the difficult thing, and I don't like saying it because I know that it upsets fans, but it needs to be said. That seating, which will be too small for an NHL, even if it was increased to be 18,000, I will guarantee you that the Islanders would still not come back, because there are two other owners now involved that bought in, not for it to be a Long Island team, that fiscally doesn't give them anything. Those seatings don't pay them enough for the $500 million valuation. Even if there was enough seating, they would still want to be and remain in Brooklyn. That's the simple truth of it, and it sucks. It sucks as a Long Islander. It sucks as I've moved to Suffolk and now work in Suffolk County. And I get the difficulty here. But the fact is that and these owners coming in to do what they did is what paid back Charles in sinking money into the organization for years and years and years. Nassau blew it, and that's the simple truth. And it doesn't matter how many seats, or if it's 10 years down the line when they finally get Nassau Coliseum sorted out. Doesn't matter. Whatever is built there will have nothing to do with the Islanders except for the four games that they agreed to. And that's the crux of the matter. And, it stinks. And I don't say it saying, hey, take that. It's just, that's what it is. And I people that I've spoken to, people that work with Ledecky and Malkin, don't seem to feel that Brooklyn or the situation is changing one bit. So, you know, they're not blinking. This the Post article for them just made them shake their heads. It's they're continuing the social media and fan drama that goes on Facebook and Twitter doesn't mean much to the Islanders owners because it's just social media. We seem to feel because we use it that it's the everything. But we should know it's just a vocal minority. And the fact remains that the owners are on path and for what they're planning. And, you know, even more so, which was ridiculous in the article saying Ledecky is eyeing Queens. Ledecky is just one guy of what is a triad. There are three owners. And Ledecky has not even taken control. Right now,
speaking of triad, it looks like we're about to become a triad. You want to remember what appears to be someone knocking on our door?
Yep. So let's bring in Jeff Capellini from CBS New York. Howdy, Jeff.
How you doing, guys?
Hey there.
Good. And have you blown away up there?
I'll tell you something. It got ridiculous here for a few minutes. I walked outside to do some things, to take out the garbage and do whatever, and all of a sudden I thought it was like Hurricane Sandy again, but I lost power for a bit, but it came back. So if all of a sudden I cut out mid, like, rant, you know why.
No problem. So we've been spouting off on Barclays, and I've already gone into the Nassau Follies of the Coliseum. But, you know, we can just go – I know that you have some – some thoughts on the Barclays fiasco.
It's more than anything else. I mean, I'm probably no different than you guys when it comes to and just the average fan. It's just yet another thing that just takes away from what people really want to concentrate on, and that's what's going on the ice. I mean, the team is playing a lot better now. It's starting to look like, you know, maybe they can be a 100-point team. Maybe, you know, they might get a favorable or at least a winnable first-round matchup if they do make the playoffs. And, I mean, the talk should be all about the team, the deadline, all the things that, you know, we don't get a chance to really talk about all that often. But yet, once again, we seem to get hijacked by off-ice stuff that has nothing to do with the players. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
What were you guys saying before? Because I'm sorry, I did not get to hear the first part of the show.
that's one thing that I touched on early, Jeff, and that's that the timing of this stuff. It's almost like it's planned. Sometimes it's right when we're finally, you know, last night's win in and of itself was a good win. It's a win to build off of, right?
Great
but
win.
you can't really feel great about it because we're still having to deal with this mess. I get with BD this morning and start playing the show, and what's first on the agenda? More of this garbage that we got to deal with. So I totally understand what you're saying. That's exactly what we were touching on earlier.
Well, what I did was I spoke to BD during right after the Cosman and Company story came out. I sent to Evan Roberts the Isles beat breakdown and the vetting process of the Post story. So I never heard back from Evan, but I think he did look at it because. You know, we did the interview with that guy, and he seemed pretty sure of himself. Now, I mean, I don't want to go and say anything about another news organization being that I work for one that's a competitor, and it's just not my way. But, you know, I don't like the idea of unnamed sources. It bothers me. We run into this issue a lot with the Jets, because, I do a lot with the Jets, and not so much this year, but in years past, when things weren't going well, the unnamed sources just seem to come out of nowhere, and the timing is impeccable, you know?
Yep.
Now, it's just like with the Isles, the product on the ice is pretty darn good. And then you have, you know, I don't want to say the Rangers paper of record, but it seems that way. All of a sudden coming out within 2 weeks, you got rumblings about Tavares, and then you got this. I just don't know how to process that, you know what I mean? I don't know what the motivation is. Is it a coincidence? Is it actually good reporting? I mean, I just don't know where that's coming from. What do you guys think?
Look, it is interesting when the Rangers have like a bad loss, and you know, especially with the Larry Brooks one. You know, Larry Brooks is an interesting fellow, but sometimes he has some insightful pieces, and mm-hmm. sometimes he's got, well, you know, garbage, and especially when it starts expounding in places and things that is not his expertise. And
I mean, do you guys think that Brooks was had something to do with the piece by the other two guys, the other two reporters who I haven't seen as necessarily Isles reporters in the past? Do you think that perhaps though, you know, Brooks might have been influenced and influenced in this?
Passively, you know, maybe passively, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying like, well, everybody's waiting in the wings looking to jump on the bandwagon once the first thing is published. But, you know, like we were talking about, like I was mentioning earlier, how people like BD and others feel the obligation to jump out and refute some things when they happen to know otherwise than what was stated. Other people also say, well, okay, this is going to get some run now. I better, you know, put my spin on it as well. That kind of aligns with the original point. I would think, not knowing anything at all myself inside, that it would be more of like a passive influence than a, hey, you know, we're going to get this out there type of thing.
Right. But do you think that if it was something that he had told, he would have done it himself?
Well, when it has to do with Barkley, it might have – the one thing he could have done is when you know a lot of different hockey people or former – you know, former employees, former people, a lot of hockey, you know, there's always chatter. Might have heard something and then put, the writer in touch with somebody else. Oh, yeah, this is what I'm hearing. And, you know, and they'll chase it down. You never know how that can kind of pop out. The problem is when you're basing it on that type of chatter, trying to dig it out, the only time I've seen that being done well is when Newsday finally woke up during the Lighthouse Project, when their investigative reporter started to finally dig into the D'Amato Charles Wong relationship.
Yeah.
That's when it's done right. And it took a lot of time for them to develop that. It takes a while. And what I think that's happening is they're trying to play investigative reporter, but they're not. The guy who wrote this is a mergers and acquisition guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is it's a one-sided conversation. There's no chance in hell that Jonathan Ledecky is going to say anything. You know what I mean? He hasn't taken control of the team yet. He's in no position. So, really, they have carte blanche to say whatever they really want to say, knowing that the earliest that anyone could, you know, the person named in the report could say anything is months from now, you know?
Yeah. And
it just seems like, I don't know. It seems advantageous to the publication itself.
It almost seems like blogger-esque rumor chatter. That's what it is. And not good blogger. You know what I mean?
But with a big microphone, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the problem, because the Post is a news organization, but this seems to have churned through a rumor chatter. And the thing that disturbed me that I mentioned before to John, and I cited it in the piece, is no one said it was an Isle source. No one says it was a Barkley source. Nobody even said it was a source with knowledge of anything.
Right.
It was very oddly worded, and I believe so, purposely worded. And I don't know who the hell they were talking to, but I didn't feel like it had any insight on what was really going on.
I think we all know that there's no such thing as an Islander source. I mean, at least under the Garth Snow.
Well, anything in hockey ops is very, very difficult.
Yeah, I would think that you must, if you got an Isle source, considering how he runs that ship, you know, where any bit of news, I mean, we can't even get an injury. You know what I mean? It's like suddenly somebody comes out of the blue and knows the future, you know, inner workings of how they're going to do their arena and situation. And what, I mean, that just seems a little far-fetched to me.
Yeah. So, but the thing about it. I mean, we can finally move off Barclays, but the fact is that as I think it is our role as bloggers to, you know, when things are not matching up to the information that we're getting, and it's, you know, and it, or it's just not making logical sense. You can just use some common sense and logic. You don't need inside people to give you information, even though, you know, you might have it, but the, you know, it, sometimes you just need to kind of step up and say something. And it was good that, you know, it was good that other people did chime in. I know that there was a piece in the New York Magazine today, which is really just saying the stuff that we had already said. And, you know, it's the same concept.
And you guys have the, I mean, just, I'll leave it at this, but you guys have the ability, not being, you don't answer to anybody, which is good in one sense, in that you can take the time to vet this a lot more than mainstream people can generally do if they have no one they can talk to. You know what I mean?
I dig it. I wish my whole life operated under the umbrella of I don't have anybody to answer to. That's a beautiful thing. I will say one more time, though. I touched on this earlier, too, and it really does remind me, now that I think about it a little bit more, listening to you guys, of the quote-unquote early days when the hockey bloggers were really kind of ramping things up and flexing their muscles a little bit, when I experienced firsthand down here the beat reporters having to touch on things that weren't quite out there yet, simply because I got it out there or somebody else got it out there. And, and they would never cite the outlet at that time. It was always, as multiple online outlets have reported. Who's multiple?
You can rest assured they never will. But that doesn't mean that what you're doing, you know, doesn't have merit. Of course it has merit. And, you know, because you're the body of work and the number of people that trust you tells you all you need to know.
Hey, BD's own opinion created a Newsday editorial opinion recently. We'll get to that later, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about that now. I mean, that was the one thing that I appreciated. They didn't cite it in the Newsday piece, but she did when Randy Marshall, who was the investigative reporter who helped out with the Lighthouse Project, saw my post. And maybe she saw I had also commented also that, you know, this is when other mainstream sites need to step up. And I don't know whether she was listening to that or just based on the piece that I had written myself. She basically put she's part of the Newsday editorial board, and I really appreciate that she respected and was inspired by my piece to basically iterate some of the points there herself. And it helps at least fight back when I kind of felt like the Islanders fans were being bullied by a mainstream media site that wasn't really doing proper channeling of news, I guess we would call it. It wasn't kosher.
It makes you wonder also, you know, we asked for the mainstream to open its eyes and to get involved, and then you look at the sheer number of reporters who actually cover the team. It's not that many. So it's,
no, it's true.
You know, I mean, Art Staple does a great job. He's tremendous. But he's got to be very careful about what he does, you know. He's still, even though they're in Brooklyn, Newsday is still considered, you know, the mainstream paper or outlet of the team. So it's, you know, it's got to be very careful. And the consistent reporting when it comes to the Post or the Daily News or whoever else you want to name, just it isn't, you know, anywhere near what the Rangers get. So maybe that's part of the problem.
That's true, too. That's a good point.
Yeah. How about on the ice, fellas?
Well, on the ice, I mean, we've seen a lot of the stuff that, you know, since right before the All-Star break, even, despite some injuries, that they were still able to kind of hold it together, and the possession numbers were actually rising. And here we are, and things are kind of growing.
Yeah, I was very impressed with what I saw last night. I mean, it all comes down to goaltending at the end of the day. But the fact that the Isles as a whole are so much better defensively from, you know, even if it's the first, you know, the first line does struggle defensively at times, it goes from them all the way back to the seventh defenseman. I mean, it's just a better concept this year. They're just doing a much better job in their own end. And when you get Greiss and you get Kolak doing what they're doing, you know, even with the occasional hiccup here and there, they're good enough now to overcome it. And, you know, in years past, they were unable to do so. And now that the offense seems to be getting itself in gear, specifically Tavares, you're starting to get the feeling that one and done, maybe, you know, may not be the case this year. It might be a little premature to say that, but at the same time, 6-1-1 stretch here, scoring goals, protecting leads, it's definitely encouraging, no question about it. But my issue is I wonder how much Garth is going to fortify this on Monday, by Monday. What do
well,
you
that's
think?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, at first, most people know. I mean, I am a strong proponent of a proactive general manager constantly trying to fix it, make the team better, even if the team appears to be good, because that's how you stay on top. I understand that in the cap age, it's hard to just go crazy and add everybody you want to add. But, you know, it's not like they're strapped. You know, they do have room to do some things. They have to make some tough decisions. We're going to find out if playing out the string with Okposo and Nielsen is going to end up paying off. And, you know, I think ultimately Franz is going to be back. And he just seems like more of a – I don't want to say that Kyle's not a team guy, but Kyle's got more options. And Franz, I think he really likes it here and wants to stay. And at the same time, this probably will be his last payday. I would not be surprised at all if he took less to stay.
I hear what you're saying there, Jeff, and I've had that thought myself before about Franz Nielsen, and it's not so much that he's more of a team guy as opposed to what you're touching on with Okposo with the options. It's Franz Nielsen just kind of feels like an Islander, doesn't he?
He does.
I mean, it's hard to explain in any other way, but I just get that
the one Milbury guy.
Yeah, right. But we said at the beginning of the year that having some room, as you noted, at this point in the season with a week left to go, and being competitive is where you want to be, and you have to have that flexibility. And here they are, a week left of the deadline, in good position, starting to get hot at the right time, which is what we've all been waiting for and hoping for. And BD and I crunched it a couple weeks ago looking at the different 10-minute or 10-game segments of the season. If we broke it down by 10 minutes, we'd be here for 5 hours every week. But the 10-game segments of the season, and this right now is shaping up to be their best stretch yet, both as a team and John Tavares individually, which is a wonderful indicator at this time of the year. So the hope is that they haven't topped out like they possibly did last year, that they're playing their best hockey now. And you're right, now's the time for that proactive GM to go out and get somebody. Whether or not that happens is the big question.
The question, I wonder just how big Garth thinking, if he's thinking that along those lines. I mean, I've always had the belief that even though the Vanek thing ultimately didn't work out, that he's always in his mind thought that Vanek type is still a necessity. Because, you know, he's tried in the past with the other players, and of the same ilk, and, you know, it didn't work out for whatever reason. But I'm sure that in his mind, you know, we all complain about, you know, get JT this, get JT that. I mean, I lead the way on that. And it's because, you know, I view John Tavares as a player who, though he's creeping up again, he's slowly but surely getting back to that point per game overall ratio that you want. I think he's a better talent than that. So my thing has always been, let's maximize the best player we have, you know? Get him everything. Equip him. That should be the first job. Now, it helps that the line mates he's played with lately are helping him, and he looks more like himself. He's not trying to do everything by himself, which he was doing for a stretch there. and it was really hurting the both ends of the ice. But now, you know, he's got a space to do the things he wants to do. Now, the question is, does Garth say, well, the first line looks like it's better, at least the combination we have right now. Is it more about getting a depth forward? Is it more about him trying to hit a home run? Or is it more about just riding this out and maybe tweaking it slightly? I kind of think that the East is so wide open with the exception of the Capitals, and nothing is guaranteed with them. You know, I don't care what anybody says. Any team can be beaten. If your goaltender's playing well and you make the right move and you're playing your best hockey going into the playoffs, anybody can be beaten. So I'd be interested to see what Garth's mindset is with regards to, do we go for it, like really go for it, or do we just, you know, have the faith, maybe tweak and add some depth, and then let it roll from there? What do you think?
And I think that his mindset is, as far as I can glean, is that it's always aggressive. The problem is that the market dictates. And one of the main concerns was there was some trades earlier this season, but even people were telling me, you know, the market is really slowing down. I don't really expect anything to really happen. And then all of a sudden, all the other articles start coming out that the same thing is, you know, basically the market is really slowed down and the cost is very high. And you look at what Chicago, I keep on citing it because it's a good example. Vermeer, you know, third liner costing a first round pick and a really good prospect for Chicago. And do you want the Islanders paying that price of losing a Dal Col? And yes, it might not help, you know, but does it hurt? You're obviously going to hit into your plans in your prospect pool, but do you want to really, how much do you want to pay?
Yeah. It is interesting.
I think that's the most difficult part, because you know that Barzal and Dal Col are all future pieces. Do you want to give it up for a rental? Now, on one part, look, you know, like we've all kind of been kind of pulling out our hair that Anders Lee and Strome were not playing to the level that they were last year. But I think it's been more important in the second half that Ryan Strome and Anders Lee are actually doing much better now and rising. And, you know, maybe they can't exceed last year if we look at the main stats, but at least they're heating up and rising at the right time. And that's why it drives me nuts that people keep on bringing up Ladd from Winnipeg, because Ladd is a top six guy. He's not a top three guy. Where are you really getting better? The team is full of top six players. You know, you want the trade to be, and I really think that it's going to be about, if a trade is to happen, it's about salary players. I don't think he wants the rental, because I don't think he's willing to pay the price. Because if you think a third line guy is going to cost, you know, a first round pick and a really good prospect, what does a top three do? You know, that's the heavy price. And if we look historically, not many trade deadline deals have been the world beater differences for different teams. That's the other thing. You know, we all get stuck, and we want these players and we want these things. But if we look historically, though there have been times like Hossa for Chicago, when they did pay the price, it's actually kind of rare that they were the big difference makers of going into the next round or, you know, bringing in the bacon. And I think that the Islanders, and now we live in the cap era where you really need to not give away prospects. So it's a really tug of war, I think, that's going on for Garth Snow. And I don't think it's that easy. If you have a slow market and you have that GM that's in that tug of war of, all right, I want to make the team better, but I can't gut. I can't overpay. What can I do that's smart or simply, and knowing that the team is rising as well. It's a very weird balancing act. I don't think it's very easy. And I don't think there's a real good, you know, people will complain that if Garth doesn't make a deal, but I think there's a lot to it this year, and some of not in his power and some that might be.
I think that, it's, I mean, before Tavares started taking off and the secondary scoring continued to complement him as he started to take off, which is the case, seems to be the case right now. The idea of a home run for the top line was something, I mean, that everybody would want. I think you'd want that at all times. But I think at this point now, if the market will bear it, they need to find their Butch Goring, that type of player. And that's an impossible – it's hard to describe what that player is, but it has to be somebody that can galvanize them at both ends of the ice, so to speak, if it's going to be a forward. It can't just be someone who you think is going to be, you know, not a 50-goal scorer, but someone who's going to be a sniper. Yeah, you want that. But if you can get somebody who's well-rounded and can basically just bring it from an intensity standpoint on a night-to-night basis, other guys will follow that lead. And if they keep playing the way they're playing right now, and you add that type of player, then you're really talking about something, because your depth through the top six, you know, and into your top nine will be improved, and then you already know what you have at the fourth line. So I think then you're rolling four and you're feeling pretty good about yourself.
But
doesn't necessarily have to be a superstar, doesn't have to be a star. It just has to be, if it's going to be done, a player that's going to fit perfectly into the situation and elevate who's around them.
Well, we're starting to touch here on something that people are starting to talk about again. I was taking a look at Twitter the other day, and Staple had one of the Q&A sessions or something like that, and somebody was asking about what kind of deadline ads there might be, or what does the team see as needs, and I think he was simply throwing out his own opinion that he believes that the team could still use a real ass kicker in the room. And I think when you bring up a guy like Butch Goring, you know, everybody knows the old story that, you know, Goring was a guy that came in and basically looked everybody in the face and said, "You guys don't realize how good you are." I think that is the type of intangible that Staple was alluding to when he made that comment. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at too. I saw some reaction to that on Twitter where people, you know, I mean, there was some talk of, I think people took that to be a fighter comment. That was not even close to what the point there. The point is, you know, here's a team that we've all been looking for to take the next step, right? And that, an addition like that at the deadline, and I don't know who that might be right now. We can throw out some names out there later, but that's the type of thing that I think could really, help this team turn a corner in terms of making an impact in the postseason.
Well, that's why a guy I loved last offseason, absolutely adored, was Justin Williams. I just loved him. Because, no, he's not a 40-goal scorer. But this guy is as clutch as they come. And, you know, he signed a modest deal. I mean, modest, considering, he's been an MVP, he's been a Conn Smythe winner and whatnot. I mean, that's a guy, that's the type of guy. I think back even further, because, watching this team since I was seven, back in the late 70s, all the way through. You look at Claude Lemieux, Esa Tikkanen. Guys like, it's hard to actually put a value on it and to say exactly what type of player that is. But you know it when you have it, and you see it right away, because they're the ones who will do whatever it takes. The guy, if he's out there, that if they find him, I think it fits exactly into the narrative you're putting out there as well.
Yeah, you do definitely want that in the, that has been missing in the, back in the day, back when we used to be more in the locker room, between even journeyman Mike Sillinger or Bill Guerin, you had Brendan Witt. They were all very, you could tell that they were very highly respected people in the locker room, that they were important people. And I think that though there probably are a couple in there now, they could use another voice. The problem is, it's very difficult to, that's a tough tangible to find at the trade deadline, but it is something that is feasible to find because that doesn't always cost you the first round pick. That doesn't always cost you the prospect. That could cost you a third round pick. That could cost you a fourth round pick. And
The value to you trying to acquire it is higher than the team that's giving him up.
Yeah.
Probably. Because, that playoff team is not going to give that player up.
Yeah. Exactly. But a team that. Whether they're going to be a UFA, but not, they're not a top, maybe they're not a top six forward. The Islanders, if you can't. You were talking about the needs, and I agree with you that they definitely need a forward. It would be great to have a forward, even if it costs them Lee or Strom or Dahl Cole, that put them ahead. That was a need. I think there's no doubt. I just don't think that's coming until summer. I don't think they can make that deal now. And I think that Hamonic is a wonderful piece to make that happen. And I think it's going to be a very interesting draft coming up.
Right.
I don't think the market leans in this kind of, unless somebody finally bites, I don't think that's going to really happen here. But I definitely agree with you. Depth can be, and especially depth in the locker room, can be gotten this trade deadline.
I wonder, I'm just going to throw a name out there. It's been talked about. Think of a player like Parenteau, even though he had left. Probably because when he didn't get what he wanted and whatnot. But that type of player kind of fills the depth, top nine, can score, knows JT. He fits all the pieces, and I'm sure I don't think he'd cost anything of significance.
I think it does, unfortunately, because Toronto, he's a low-cost guy. Toronto's not moving him because he has a big contract. Toronto's moving him because they're not going anywhere. That's the problem that I see with PA. The other issue with PA is I don't know if he really – I don't mind him for depth if he comes cheaply. I just don't think they're going to come – he's the type of player that comes cheaply. He does make the power play more powerful. The power play, which has been rising, it's now 11th. It's moving up from 12th. It keeps on moving up. He would bring that up higher because he's really good with the puck. And even if you use him, and the Islanders use, and they roll three lines. So it doesn't matter where he is. It could be making one of the lines better. My problem with him is I feel that the price will be too high, and people have a tendency to think that PA should be on JT's line. And I think that's a complete mistake because look at it, Strom, Lee, Grabowski, they've all been playing much better. I don't think PA is as good as people like to remember. When PA was doing well here, the Islanders stunk. That's an important piece to remember. The forwards were always in the negatives. He's not a good player without the puck. These are things that really, and being good without the puck is actually really important in the playoffs.
Right.
And that's the one I have a very mixed feeling. If he comes cheap, I'm all for it. The problem is I feel like Toronto is really trying to collect as much as possible here. Somebody else might be willing to pay.
I think that PA is also another example going into as you were saying about how he did his best year when the Islanders weren't very good. It sounds a lot like Matt Molson.
Yes, and also Grabner, they did very well. They excelled on team. They excelled when the team wasn't doing as well. And as the Islanders started to shift, besides getting Letty and Boychuk, they seemed to go for what they seemed to go for, which was different, is this line balancing. And they've done it last. We've seen it last year and we've seen it this year. And I think that's the difference of when you have better players, you can kind of complement them more. And I don't think that PA, and that's the difficulty of trying to figure out who they would try to go get, because how do they fit?
I don't think there's any way. I can't see trading a Strom about Carl. I can't see it. I just don't. I mean, it seems to fly in the face of everything that they're trying to do.
Well, unless you can get like somebody who's worth it and under a good contract, you know, like let's look at Colorado. Mm-hmm. Colorado, they have Duchesne. Now Colorado is in the mix now because they stuck to their guns instead of panicking, and they're not going to do that. But a player like Duchesne is the kind of guy who, you know, is an elite forward that is a little further along but below his prime. And that would make the Islanders kind of step ahead. But those kind of trades and those kind of deals, they don't happen at the trade deadline. Trade deadline is moving chaff. You know, look, yeah. If that cap is going down, there are teams that are going to be crunched this summer. And, you know, some will try to move some stuff, but not everybody's going to be buying, especially if the market's too high. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens on Monday.
Knowing that Oposo, let's just assume that he's not coming back. Let's assume that Franz is, I think he is, but let's say 50-50. Who else, is there anyone else who will be unrestricted after this season? That is a big deal. I mean, Martin is up for a raise, but as it pertains to what you're saying about perhaps the cap going down, having to keep that in mind as you approach Monday, if this team continues to play the way it's playing and you can do a depth move that's not going to kill you, Islanders are going to be so far ahead of the curve this summer from a financial standpoint, it'll give them the flexibility. Because I don't think the free agency is not going to be, it's not great this summer. There's not a lot of big-name players that are going to be out there anyway. So, like you were saying before, that draft is going to be something else.
If I may jump in there real quick, we're ignoring one major UFA that's coming off the books this summer, and that is the dynamo that is defenseman Brian Strait, which I think is a huge deal.
I don't hate him at all. I mean, I understand. He's a serviceable guy. He does what he needs to do. He makes mistakes, sure, but, I mean –
what do you expect from a seventh? That's the craziness is that, look, he's a seventh defenseman that plugs in when other people are injured.
Right.
Yeah.
And
when he plays a lot,
he gets exposed. That's the defenseman.
It's a go-to thing for me because it's part of my shtick on this show. He's become my whipping boy. But I will say, and one of the things that I noticed about last night's game, and I don't want to give too much time to it because it's going to ruin my gimmick, but I saw Brian Strait make a really heady play in his own zone where he jumped up and intercepted a pass and banked it off the boards, and I had to look twice and go, oh my God, that was Strait. But anyway.
And notice one extra thing on that. Who was he paired with last night?
Zabitsky, right?
Yeah, I think he was. I can't remember off the top of my head now.
So they changed up the pairings, and he looked a little bit better. Maybe, you know, some of the pairings he doesn't really work well with.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind.
Do you think there's any chance, I mean, that Hamonic eventually may decide that,
you know, people bring that up. I don't think so.
Yeah,
because he doesn't.
I have to ask you because it just feels like.
Yeah. And I definitely understand it. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would make a decision like that lightly.
Right.
Whatever the reasons are, whatever it is, I just kind of feel from the disposition and in the locker room and just the interviews. And just from what I see, and him being such a character guy, and, you know, it just doesn't seem to me be like something that would be a small decision or he'd be flaky on. So I would have to doubt it. But I do think Hamonic is actually, as much as people don't like that he's, you know, going to be going, he's an opportunity for the Islanders because he's a very well-respected player.
Yeah.
I tend to think he's sometimes a little bit overrated because he's physical And in the new NHL, that doesn't always matter as much, but but he's having a fabulous year and his contract is amazing.
And
with the cap going down, which only makes it even more important. And, I've said this before. Look, you look across the way at St. Louis. St. Louis is a team that keeps on getting into the playoffs and getting knocked out. You know, we all complain that the Islanders got knocked out the first time they got there, finally. I don't really count the shortened season one. It didn't seem like the team was really there. That short sprint was a little bit of I'm going to call it a dream. There are teams, and look at the Capitals, year after year after year getting knocked out of the playoffs. You know, there is a lot of pressure, and St. Louis is smashed against the cap. Shattenkirk is on for another this year and next year. After that, he's going to get a boffo payday. You have David Bax, who is one of those kind of guy, when you're saying who's the kind of guy who could be in the locker room and kind of grade on people and be a little bit more physical, somebody in the top nine that could play anywhere and still score maybe 15, 20 goals. He's becoming a UFA this year.
Yep.
How are they going to afford that? And they have a hole in their top six ever since, they just don't have the players there. Now, they're doing very well, but
Don't forget also, they got big problems in goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, not because of ability mostly, but because of injuries. I mean, they've
had injuries all year long, which is why it's kind of amazing that they're still doing so well. And that's why I don't think they're going to make a trade during the season. But they have big, big decisions to make, especially what happens if they get knocked out of the playoffs again, not to mention the coach gets the axe. You know, they have a lot of stuff. You know, I would love for the Islanders to go grab, David Bax. And I've talked about this before. I feel that the number one issue for the Islanders has to do with, you know, whether they can sub it with Hamonic or not, is getting a possession puck mover, a top guy, because I don't think Letty seems like he's becoming the number two defenseman. He doesn't look like the number one defenseman that he was last year, and that's okay. It's a contract year. There's a little bit higher play. Maybe he turns it on. Boychuk has fallen a little bit. I feel like he's fallen back into a second pair guy, and that's fine too, because being a top four is what the Islanders thought they were getting in Boychuk. So that's perfectly fine, but they're not getting the type of possession and that puck flow that they were getting last year. That was the big difference of the first half of last season, that they went on that huge tear. And somebody like Shattenkirk would be a number one. You know, I've talked about this with like Dougie Hamilton over in Calgary, where Calgary, you know, paid out a lot of money in the trade, and then their team just kind of fell apart. And then they've been moving out money since. If the Islanders can use Hamonic as an opportunity, they might be able to get out of that because of his contract, because of all those different aspects to him, somebody who they feel could be that role of a top pair guy. But it's an opportunity.
Do you guys put any stock in the repeated reports that about Trouba?
No, I don't.
He wants a payday too.
Yeah, the thing about Trouba is, and I don't necessarily think that Trouba is a top pairing defenseman. I think he's a top four defenseman. He might be a number three. He wants to be paid like it's the same situation that Bruins had last year with Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah.
Where they want to be paid like top pair defensemen. And the Islanders are not going to do that when they have so much riding on making sure everything is clear for JT and have holes and players walking away that they have to fill in other ways. I can't see them absorbing that. And it still I still believe this fully, that when it comes down to it, the only team who would gain by leaking the Hamonic situation in the first place is Winnipeg, where Hamonic comes from. And I know Garth never forgets. And I truly believe that even on spite and being pissed off, he's not willing to necessarily work with the Jets. I know that the Jets seem to keep pushing this notion of Trouba, but I don't see the Islanders really paying that price, and I still don't feel that they necessarily really want to work with Winnipeg.
Let me ask you this. Shifting gears. Chiarelli said that, I guess it was either early this week or late last week, that they're going to be sellers. Knowing that, and knowing the history that Garth has with Chiarelli, it would be logical to hear them linked, not necessarily on Hamonic, just in general. Wouldn't you think that if there was a team the Owls would do some work with at the deadline, it would be Edmonton?
It could be. It depends. Look, the one question is, especially after, is Chiarelli going to feel a little bit burned over overvaluing Griffin Reinhart, who they thought could be ready this year? You know, the Islanders internally didn't necessarily disbelieve in Reinhart. They just felt he was going to take more time. Defensemen take much more development time. The question is, does Chiarelli feel a little bit burned? Because I was thinking to myself, you know, the Islanders could really deal Mayfield, because next year you have Pelech also, hopefully. And then you have Pulock. So the fact is, they have a lot of defensemen. They can spare one. I definitely don't think they're going to move Pulock at all, but I do think that somebody could be available if they, you know, and they certainly have need, but it really depends on what Chiarelli and what their scouts feel of Mayfield. That could turn into something. Could that in a first give you, a player? The other issue is, everybody keeps on bringing up, is it Eberle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always muck up the pronunciation, but hey, yeah, go me.
Yeah. Hey, I noticed another one. I won't soon forget that. I'll remind you that you got during this very show.
Eberle,
so
Eberle,
continue on.
Eberle, I think, look, you play Eberle with the Tavares, and it's, you know, he should be better. He's got incredible hands for a sub. He's not prototypical as far as size goes, but he's got great hands. He knows how to score. I mean, but again, that's how do you acquire a guy like that unless you're willing to part with, you know, the Hamonics of the world or the Del Colls, you know what I mean? The guys who, well, I don't think the Islanders could ever trade unless they're getting something great for
them. Well, here's the thing. The reason that Eberle keeps on coming up in the rumors is it makes me feel that Edmonton wants to move him. And maybe because he's making $6 million a year. And they have a lot of glut of forwards. But the fact is, I don't know if the Islanders, unless they feel he's the guy, do they really absorb that $6 million? You know, Duchesne costs $6 million. I think Duchesne is 10 times better than Eberle.
So, yeah, I wouldn't do it.
So, but it's just that that's the issue is he the guy and the assets that it's going to take to get, you know, and what Edmonton needs. Despite all that relationship that they have, I don't know if, you know, I think that the Islanders would love Nail. I think that he seems to be moving along. I don't hear him rumored at all. But I think that, those forwards, the forwards of Edmonton is all they have because they've made such mistakes defensively. And those that they haven't made mistakes on, like Nurse and...
Well, you get the first pick in the
yeah,
draft.
Yeah, yeah. And Nurse and Klefbom are what teams are going to ask for, and the Islanders are going to ask for in dealing Hamonic during the season. So, you know, it's going to be a very difficult road. I think Edmonton is probably more capable of doing those kind of deals if they want to work with the Islanders in the off season, especially if they're not willing to move Nurse and Klefbom. They're not going to move Hamonic within the season. So it really depends. And that's why I feel like, and that's why I downplayed this market and kind of feel like, you know, we're going to be disappointed, not because Garth is not going to try. I think he's been aggressive for a long time. And I think he was aggressive this summer. I just think whatever he had planned. And I also think that there were some trade scenarios they tried early this season that just didn't happen. But now I think it's in a difficult position. And I think that's why we keep on hearing about the summer. And that's the great difficulty. But I think, Jeff, I really appreciate having you on. I think we're going to hit a couple more issues. Thanks for coming on, my friend. I really appreciate it. That was great.
Hey,
anytime
Jeff.
Anytime you want, let me know. I'll come on.
I want to extend my thanks, too, and it's a pleasure to chat with you for the first time. We've interacted on Twitter here and there over the years, and it's always a pleasure to get a little bit closer to someone who's led a life of misery with the Mets, Jets, and Isles like myself. So thanks for coming on.
I'll tell you, I'm not a Mets guy. I'm a Yankee guy. It's the one saving grace. I know. It's the one saving grace. I thank my father every single day.
Well, but I got the same thing. I went to Florida State, so I always lean on them for, I've got a few championships that I can recall.
Yeah, I do that with Syracuse sometimes, too. But usually I'm doing that with lacrosse. It's up at it.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. I had a good time.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy.
All right.
So maybe we may have played our best hand with Jeff there and closed the book on Winnipeg, but I did want to bring up one other thing, and I can't remember. You remind me, I don't know if we've already thrown a big icy bucket of water or took a piss on this already and put it to bed, but Andrew Ladd keeps coming up out of Winnipeg, mostly from the fans. He's going to be a hot ticket item at the deadline. Is it the price that's going to make him not in play for the Islanders, or is it the fact that he's not a fit maybe analytically, or what is it there?
I'm not sure. Look, Ladd, I've kind of hit on this on Twitter a bit because the reason is Ladd is a top six guy, but he's not a top three guy. And that's where I keep on falling into, because you know that Winnipeg is going to drive a very high price. For that alone, I would not be interested in Ladd. The team is full of top six forwards. And especially when I started to do out the numbers, he's not better than Lee. He's not better than Strome. You're not going to run him on the top line necessarily. So why pay the rental price? And that's the difficulty that I have, because the Jets are going to try to reap as much as possible. And I know that fans will be frustrated, because teams that are cup or bust. You know that the Capitals, cup or bust. You know that Dallas is going for it, cup or bust. You know the Rangers are going for it. They have to. You know Tampa, if they're in the mix, they have to. They would love to make a kind of deal and hope for the best, because after this, they're blowing up that team. So St. Louis, you have these teams that are really against the wall or against the cap wall, and the Islanders are neither. And that's the thing. You have to know when to do it, and you always want the team to compete, but you can't always just pay a horrendous price that hurts. You know, they need their kids to come up. You need your entry-level contracts, because when JT gets $10 million at least a year on his next deal, the Islanders need to be able to swallow that and still have a competitive team. And that's the great difficulty. You need your kids. You need Barzal. You need the kids like Dal Cole. You need them to come up. And that is what's been so great for the Islanders, is they've been so good on the draft and picking these NHL players that either, you know, come up within their system, or they're able to deal like with Griffin Reinhart and utilize it into different type of assets in a really smooth trade. And it's really important to be able to either reallocate or use them, but you need those chips. And if you give away those chips, you know, you're sunk, especially at the wrong time. And I think that's the game. How we've all talked about how much Garth is a poker player, never shows his hand, is always very cool. I've heard from people that have worked and dealt with Garth that he's a very cool operator and he never panics. And we, as fans, almost always panic. So there's always a dichotomy there. But you want your GM to be the cool customer, not giving away the store. And I think that people are going to slam Garth, not, you know, if the market doesn't turn into anything. But I don't think it's going to be for him not trying. I just think that, you know, his responsibility is not only making sure that they're competing this year, but you're not destroying the plans for the further for the next couple of years. You need your kids to be those entry level contracts, those cheap contracts, because you're going to start paying some players. And I think that's really, really important to remember. And people don't really like to deal with that because those are things that are really, you know, they're difficult to grasp when you're passionate and you really want to win. But, you know, I think we all know from this year that the Islanders is not, honestly, a cup-winning team. They're not better than Washington, who's loaded up. And people will say, well, why can't we be Washington? Washington is only Washington after years and years and years and failing and finally having the right pieces at the right time and everything working together in unison. It didn't happen overnight. And I think that people need to let the time develop. I think the Islanders are very capable of going deep into the playoffs. I think they can definitely get past the first round. And for me, as I talked about in the beginning of the season, that would be good enough for me. Especially if Strome and Lee keep on rising and shake off a horrendous first half of the season. So I think that we need to not temper expectations, but just remember there's a bigger picture there. And I think that, you know, that's what the GM's responsibility is, the big picture.
Okay. So maybe not a cup winning team, and maybe we need to let the years play out, but you know, not everybody is going to do that. So let's go with a little pie in the sky scenario, since, you know, the hot ticket item right now, fuck the Barclays thing. Let's keep talking trade deadline as we go to wrap here, because it is the last show before the deadline hits. And let's give some people what may turn out to be false hope, but a little JJism here. If you want to go pie in the sky and you want to look for something big from the Islanders before the trade deadline, why don't you look for those two types of players that we talked about there? A guy who can get in the room, a veteran forward perhaps, and say, hey, you guys are a lot better than what you've shown in the last couple of years. Let's go do something special this offseason. And why don't you pair that type with the defenseman that everybody's after, with the puck mover that everybody wants? Scour the general fanager or whatever your favorite site may be. Scour those sites. Look at the teams that are out of it.
I can say it immediately.
Let me finish. Let these people have a moment of hope. And see what teams have those two, and then come up with your fantasy scenarios and throw them out there. And here is your cue, sir, so that BD may quickly shoot them down.
Well, there. We've talked about it before. David Bax and Kevin Shattenkirk.
There you go. That's the name I wanted to throw into your hopper. We can add David Backus to BD's official list of names
that
we've screwed up this year.
That's good enough. That type of scenario, St. Louis, as much as St. Louis fans seem to not want to deal with, I've spoken to a couple. They think that the couple free agents are going to change their fortunes. St. Louis is in deep, deep trouble and has to really make decisions. Do they wait with Shattenkirk until next year, where he is going to be a pending UFA and then be put to the burner? Or do they deal with him now and deal? He's been rumored to be for sale earlier last summer. And then off the market, and then on the market, and then off the market. You know, you never know. But the fact is, he's an elite puck mover. And if there is a scenario that the Islanders can throw together, trade deadline or I don't know when, that if they could somehow move Hamonic and get in Shattenkirk, as much as I like Hamonic, goodbye, because Shattenkirk is an elite player. and last year's All-Star, and is exactly what the team needs. And then you have David Backes, who's a you know, a gritty, grinding forward, can score, can fight, can stand up for himself in kind of a locker room. He's a captain. Those are the two. That's a scenario. And he's a UFA. So can St. Louis really afford to re-sign him? Those are the two players. That would be substantial. You know, he wouldn't, Backes wouldn't be necessarily playing on the top line, but he could easily fill in on the other two and be scoring goals and, you know, doing the kind of things that they need to do. Those are the two that would be world beaters. And in other thought is that, you know, whether it happens or not, if nothing happens, at least you know with Pulock coming up that if Pulock sticks and Dehan gets better, I would run Pulock on that third line and let Zidlicky and Strait be the depth on defense. And that would be an advantage that they did not have last year.
So there you go. There's the two types that we can put together from the same team and hope that hope high in the sky that something like that goes down. Maybe not now, maybe not next week, but hey, you never know. It's going to be interesting. I think the team in my neck of the woods is going to be interesting to watch, the Lightning, because they're in the make or break situation and they have the Drouin wild card, and everybody will be looking after that. But I'll be sitting back and watching. I don't get too excited about the trade deadline anymore because, you know, so many years of not just Islander disappointment. I shouldn't say disappointment, just, you know, stagnancy for the most part. But overall disappointment. I seem to think every year that it's going to be this great day. No longer do I sit there and watch all day long and look for every last move to come through. I'm also a very busy guy at work. Who can do that anymore? But it's still going to be interesting to watch, and there's so many different scenarios that can play out. But more than anything, let's hope that they get how many games do we have until then? Two, three? Hope they can get a couple more wins, a couple more points in the bank before then, and keep this streak going because it's been fun the last little bit here.
Yeah, they've been playing really well. It's the kind of thing that you want to see. As I warned people on Twitter, don't start thinking Grice is the top goaltender. And lo and behold, who was used right back again, right in that next game, right after Grice was used twice, Halak was used once again twice. They are sticking with it. And, you know, and the fact is Halak is still their number one because he can do the extra time. Grice is only better in limited spurts, and he's doing fantastic at it. As long as this, knock wood, this team stays healthy and things keep on continuing and rising, I do think that, I hate that lady. Nobody hears it but us. We have 90
seconds. I didn't even hear
her.
I heard her on your echo. I didn't get the panic attack that usually comes with that this time.
Well. But anyway,
since we got the warning, I want to make sure we say thanks to Jeff Capellini one more time, Green Lantern Jet. That was a pleasure. It was a good talk. And, hey, thanks to you, sir, for all that you do. I should do that more often. I should thank you each and every week. You keep me sane.
Oh, how nice. I appreciate it. And on that note, sir, until next week, we are going, I'm looking for our ending music and cannot find it. Where the hell is it? That's what happens when you start moving crap around to add your little my stupid Benny Hill theme. But anyway. that was great. And on that note, I think it's time to bail on this show. And there we are. All right. Till next week, folks. This is BD, and that man is John Jordan, and the lady is telling us we only have 10 seconds, but we can go as long as we want, and I will play out our music, and we will see you next week.
See ya.
Yes, what is it?
I need to go poopies.